Welcome to the Wonder Woman podcast, where we discuss a variety of subjects all pertaining to optimizing your physique, building strength, developing a strong mindset, and tools to help you win at life. I'm Michelle McDonald, and I'm the founder of the Wonder Woman Coaching Team. We are a community of results-driven coaches and clients who believe that we can age like never before. Welcome to the Wonder Woman podcast. I am your host, as always, Michelle McDonald. And today I would like to introduce to you a very special guest. I want you to meet Dr. Jen Gunter. She is the fearless OBGYN pain medicine physician, author, and myth buster extraordinaire. And she's changing the way we talk about women's health. And I have to say, you're a fabulous writer. She's been described as funny, erudite, compassionate, and righteous. And I have to agree. She's the go-to source for everything we thought we knew about women's health, but we're too afraid to ask. With her best-selling books, The Vagina Bible, The Menopause Manifesto, and more recently, Blood, Dr. Gunter has taken the world by storm, debunking myths and spreading evidence-based information about women's health that everyone needs to hear. She's known for her candid and no-nonsense approach. She calls herself Canadian Spice, which I love. She tackles the tough topics from reproductive rights to sexual health and menopause, all with the goal of empowering women with knowledge. Her insights are a breath of fresh air in the often murky waters of medical misinformation. Let's get started. Dr. Gunter, you've been a vocal critic of pseudoscience and misinformation in women's health. You are known as the Lasso of Truth, which I love because the Wonder Woman. Throughout your career, you've dealt with some controversial topics head on. Have there been moments or reactions that took you by surprise?
Oh, yeah, sometimes. It's never the things that you think, though. You know, you expect, you know, whatever, you know, people have political agendas to get upset. But like, for example, when I have busted the myth about periods syncing. So some people think that if you put women together, their periods will sync up. And that's not true. And it's been disproven. I actually got quite a lot of hate for that. And I was like, really? For that one? Like, who do you think I'm funded by? Like, big non-period syncing? I don't, like, but I think it, yeah, I think it's really because, you know, people have beliefs about their bodies. And, you know, undoing a belief means you have to change the way you've been thinking and everything. And also sometimes I think it just is a reaction. I don't really know for sure, but that's the one that actually surprised me the most.
You know, I'm surprised about that. I got to admit, I'm wrong here. And I'm curious what the science says about that, because I would have been the one that said, yeah, for sure, you sink. So tell me about that. And I think the response, what we want to have as a response is, oh, that's interesting. Tell me more. Instead of that knee-jerk emotional response. We want to stay in our frontal lobes. We want to stay, you know, curious and ask questions. So I'm asking that question. Tell me about that myth.
Yeah. So the myth has probably been around because, you know, it's actually misogynistic at its core. It kind of makes women like a seasonal breeder as opposed to, you know, like being in control of your own body, right? Like so the ancients used to think that women were basically wild animals and their uterus was like a wild animal inside a wild animal. So this idea that your cycle can be controlled by others is very like wild animal-esque, right? So that's probably where it comes from. It was tested, I believe, in the early 80s and in a paper that supported it existed, but the methodology isn't something we would accept today, right? So there's that.
Poor science.
Yeah. So since then, that paper has been, you know, people have attempted to reproduce those findings by several different methods and have not reproduced it. So, you know, so now we have several different research groups saying it doesn't happen. And in addition, the app Clue looked at a whole bunch of their data. And they looked at people who lived in the same households who were both tracking and found that there was no correlation. So, you know, so we have a lot of data that says no. And there's actually no possible way it could happen. There's no biological mechanism. I don't have a substance that I emit that can affect you. There isn't. And I think people say, oh, well, it's pheromones. And so
I was going to say, that's probably what people are saying.
Yeah. So this is another thing that and rocks people's world is that nobody has ever proven the existence of human pheromones. So I know the perfume industry would like you to think otherwise, but they've never actually isolated a human pheromone. And to detect pheromones, you have to have a vomeronasal organ, and humans don't have a functioning vomeronasal organ. Like dogs do, they got a big one, but we don't. So there isn't a biology that it could happen. There's nothing, no outside influence like that could affect the hormones that signal menstruation. So it's completely a myth. And, I want people to know more about their bodies, right? Like, you know, and that's one of the harms of myths is that they actually make you less informed about your body.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the issue of biases, right? Because I'm sure there are cases, and I know this has happened to me personally, where it seems that, I'm menopausal now, but when I had a period, it would seem that I would get pulled in to say, like, oh, I got my period a couple of days early. And then my girlfriend would say, oh, well, it's my period. So that's why. But that could be a bias. And like, I'm remembering this one instance because it's confirming my bias, when in fact, there's probably lots of other instances where I was visiting a friend and nothing happened to my period and I don't notice it because it's not fitting my bias.
Exactly. That's exactly what happens. And then it's just math. So if you take two randomly occurring events and line them up, they'll at times match and then they won't, and they'll match online, and you just remember the times they match. So we have a great scientific explanation for why you might have noticed that occurrence. It didn't mean that you were noticing that you synced with your girlfriend three times in the last year was wrong. It's not because you synced. It's just because it was, you know, a mathematical occurrence.
There we go. So we've just cleaned up one myth. I've been schooled, and I love that. I love when I get to learn something. So I feel like I should, you know, be paying you something, but I won't, because then that would influence your very strict policy, I think, that you have. You've got this like circle of, you know, you are not going to capitalize from spreading, other than writing your books. You don't do, and this is important for you guys to hear as well. I want to dive in a little bit more how we can maybe see for some red flags, but you don't sell supplements. You don't have a special diet out. You really stay away from that space. And I'm sure that you receive a lot of offers to sell some special shoes or a special postural brace or a special, menopause detector. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I have a very strict nothing in the space advertising policy. So if Tiffany's wants to call me, great. There's no health applications there, right? If, I have a shoe with John Fluvog again, but it's not like a special menopause walking shoe. It's just a cute shoe, right? So I'm open to clothes. That's about it.
She's open to clothes, everybody.
Clothes and jewelry, not even makeup, because, you know, that could have skincare applications, right? So, the reason for that is we have excellent studies, excellent, excellent data to show us that people, become biased when they work with industry. And, even buying a doctor a drug lunch can have an impact on their prescriptions. That's why pharmaceutical companies do it. And, you know, with a physician in the United States, you can look them up on the Centers for Medicare, and see if they've taken money from drug companies for consulting work or for speaking. But you can't look up a supplement company. You can't look up someone who has a diet. You can't look up any other soft money. You can't look anything else up. And you can't look up someone who's not a doctor. So unless they're actually saying that they have an ad, which a lot of people skirt around. I see people, you know, recommending products, saying, oh, I love this product and I bought it myself. And you're like, really? And so you're using your precious real estate to talk about this one product that doesn't seem like it would be life-changing to you. But what else has that company done for you behind the scenes? I don't know.
And or so, they might have like an affiliate link or an Amazon store.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, so there's, and I, you know, I'm not saying people are wrong for doing that. It's just a choice that I've made not to do it. And because of when I first started in the health misinformation sort of space, this is a long time ago, I said, you know, the only way to do this is to be ethical, because it's so hard. When I first started in medicine, I thought that, oh, I could do work for drug companies and I would still stay unbiased. And you can't. It's pretty clear that you're not. So, you know, I follow the evidence. And so that's just what I do. And, you know, sometimes there's consequences. Like I couldn't get my, a third season of my podcast funded, and because the only people wanted to fund it were supplement companies.
Wow. Really? I wonder if you would do like a fundraiser from followers. You would probably.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is it was such a highly produced podcast that, you know, the amount of money to raise would probably be quite a bit.
It was with TED Talks, right?
It was with TED. Yeah. So it was very produced. We had a great production company and it was great. I loved it. It was, you know, it married sort of the history of medicine with the actual science and to put things in context. So yeah, I mean, I think that it's a possibility. I'm not definitely like discounting it down the road, but it's probably not on my plate for 2024.
Well, we can see what we can do. We can do about making sure that your account skyrockets, because it is just refreshing to have somebody that really walks their talk and maintains their integrity in this space. And you're right, you know, we are biased and we're influenced, especially by money. And it's just so important that we have people like you that are in this space sharing a tremendous amount of information. And at the end of the show, I'm going to point people towards more places that they can follow you. And you know, I know you've got those three books out as well. They're fabulous books. Thank you. That I mentioned at the beginning, we've got the Vagina Bible, the Menopause Manifesto, which is an awesome title. And then the newest one about everything to do with menstruation, blood, which is, I'm hearing great reviews about.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, it's out. It's out in the US, Canada, UK, Australia, New Zealand. So, you know, it was my answer to people saying, why does nobody teach us that? You know, I would get tagged on social media all the time about, you know, is this true? Is this true? Is this true? And, you know, for me, it's easy to say, well, no, because I know the science, but people don't. They don't learn about their bodies in a practical way in school. They don't. They probably know more about frog biology when they graduate than about human biology. And I mean, I'm sure you can apply that to every field. I'm sure people graduate knowing, you know, thinking bizarre things about their muscles and thinking bizarre things about their brains. But the fact of the matter is, your brain doesn't bleed once a month. And, you know, it's a bit of an intrusive body function. And so, you know, I just really wanted people to have this evidence-based resource so they would know. So, you know, they could say, okay, well, I know this now. And so I can advocate for myself in the doctor's office. I can, you know, block that person on Instagram because they're selling me a scam, you know.
Yeah, I think probably, I know I have several clients that are still, you know, we coach everywhere from the 20s all the way up to, I think my mother is literally my oldest client. She'll be 78 next month. So that's I think our youngest client is, I think she's 20 right now, although we've had 18-year-olds before. And we get everything, right, from the different birth controls and not being able to understand what's going on with your periods. A lot of my clients don't even know what exactly they're taking and what it does to their bodies, and it was never really properly explained. I have gals suddenly going off birth control, cold turkey after 20 years, and not being, you know, not understanding that there could be a process for that to make it as pain-free and symptom-free as possible. A lot of PCOS and endometriosis. I have one gal that's just in her perimenopause, or the menopause transition, I suppose I should be saying, who is thinking about getting a hysterectomy, right? Because she's, you know, looking at that as an answer to her sudden, really heavy, really painful bleeds. It's a very important space to have open and free discussion about.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of treatments for heavy periods in the menopause transition. Certainly a hysterectomy is one of them, but you know, people tend to do also very, very well with hormonal IUD, with hormonal birth control pills. There's also a medication called tranexamic acid that you take just when you have periods, and that can reduce your bleeding. There's an endometrial ablation, which is burning out the lining of your uterus. That has some pros and cons. I mean, it's one of those I either loved it or hated it procedures. And then there's a hysterectomy. So I always want to make sure people have like the full gamut of options and know the risks and benefits. And then they can make an evidence-based choice for them, because, you know, it's so fascinating in medicine. You know, I can present those same choices to 10 different people and get 10 different, wow, like, I want that. And so it's important that we, you know, one, we sort of, you know, we try to guide people if we think something's going to be better for them. You know, for example, if somebody's 38 and they think an endometrial ablation is going to stop their periods, I'm like, if their goal is to have no bleeding at all, I'm like, that's unlikely. You'll probably still have some bleeding. If they're 48 or 49, then that might be a more reasonable goal with that procedure. So, you know, it just depends on the person and the procedure and their goals.
I love that. Again, new book called Blood, and all of these issues you go into in great detail in this book, correct?
Yeah, I talk about everything. I mean, obviously the medication's a little bit more detail because surgery counseling is a bit more one-on-one. So, you know, person A's risk with surgery is a lot different than person B's risk, but there's the general information in there. And yeah, so people can have this informed choice and go into the doctor's office. I mean, when someone comes in and they know about all the different options and they're receptive to hearing about everything, the pros and cons, it's better for them because, you know, then they've, you know, been more likely to have an informed choice. I mean, one of the analogies I give people is, say you went to a restaurant and you only thought there was one meal on the menu. It was roast chicken, and you had roast chicken. It was good. You liked it. And then you got home and you found out your friend went to the same restaurant and they were offered five different dinners, right? And they got to choose their own dinner, and they actually had whatever, the rigatoni. And they said that, wow, that was the best rigatoni I've ever had in my whole life. And you're like, what? I didn't even get offered the rigatoni. And so, you know, maybe you're still happy with the chicken, but maybe you would have preferred the rigatoni, and you don't know unless you're given that choice. And so that's kind of my whole driving thing is you need to have all the information to make an informed choice. And there's people who make decisions I wouldn't do all the time. And that's okay. As long as they're informed, that's fine.
That brings up such a great point, an informed choice. And that means, you know, understanding what a person's individual risk factors are, because we're quite diverse. So knowing your family history and your own personal risk factors, all of these things, your age, all of these things combined. So knowing what your individual risk factors are, knowing what the options are, like what's on the table, knowing maybe, you know, how big of an issue, how much it's impacting your life, you know, that's going to weigh in on your decision-making. And also, what are your outcomes? What do you hope to have happen? And then the risk factors for each choice. I mean, it's a lot. It's very, very nuanced. And I think we probably get into, again, I'm going to use that term, murky waters, when we're making emotional choices, when we're looking for that one pill or magic bullet answer, when we're being influenced by people that we maybe trust, whether it's something, a celebrity or an influencer, well, she's a doctor and she has a million followers, or your girlfriends, the Facebook group you're part of, or everyone's kind of saying the same thing. It can be really easy to not take the time to have a more nuanced approach to understanding what your individual risk factors are and what is the best option for you. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, actually, I want to talk a little bit about Facebook groups. So,
we're going deep, girls.
So I would just, you know, this is obviously not about all Facebook groups, but I know of a couple in the women's health space where all dissenting voices are kicked out. So just be very careful that the spaces that you're in these groups that are curated by people, that they may not be as reflective of the general population. So for example, you know, so there's just, people should be aware of that. I see a lot of misinformation from Facebook groups specifically. And sometimes there's even doctors that get involved in high levels in Facebook groups. So everything gets shunted their way and it's their thing. And so just, I would just be very mindful of closed spaces like that where medical information is being disseminated, because you don't know whose voice is being silenced in there. So just, that's just something to be aware of. And I think this gets to a really important point on social media is you need to fact check every single thing that you're exposed to, or you need to make sure that the person you're following is somebody you don't feel you need to fact check, right? So, you know, I don't speak outside of my area of expertise. I hope that people trust me as somebody that they can say, okay, well, Dr. Jen Gunter says that. She always leaves her references, but that's not always the case. And, you know, I don't have financial biases, but, you know, studies tell us that, you know, it's so easy for us to mistake, you know, things that aren't true as being true. It can seem true to us. It seems truthy. Why not? That makes sense, right? Like period syncing. You've heard, and you kind of heard it before. And so, right? So it's, and you can think, oh, maybe there's a mechanism, pheromones. So you can see how easy it is to believe something that isn't really have any malignancy for you believing that, right? I mean, yeah, it's got misogynistic connotations, but it's not going to hurt your health today to think that, right? So yeah, so people just need to be really wary.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Wonder Woman podcast. You know, we don't make money from this podcast. Our mission is to get as much great information out there to the widest audience possible to help more people like you thrive at any age. You could really help us out by sharing this episode with a friend who needs to hear this, or share the link to your favorite episode in your stories or whatever social platform you use. Second, please leave a rating and review on ratethispodcast.com/Wonder Woman. You're not just showing your support for the show, you're also helping other women find us. And finally, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any episodes. Thanks again for tuning in.
All right. So then I want to ask another question. You know, you're known for your very candid approach. I mean, you're very down to earth. You're very factual. I love it. It can be tough in the social media space. And I think it can be very, it must emotionally tug at you sometimes to see some of the emotional responses kind of championing accounts or myths that are untrue and maybe even harmful or spreading harmful information. So what drives you to keep these conversations open and honest? I subscribe to your Substack. I love it. It's not, I can't remember how much I pay, but it's not very much at all. And I recommend that people also subscribe to your the Vagenda Substack. But in a world full of misinformation and heightened emotions, it's those emotions, you know, what drives you to keep going and keep being that champion for truth?
Yeah. So I had a very awful medical experience many, many years ago when my kids were born. So I was pregnant with triplets and I have twins. So I went into labor at 22 and a half weeks and I delivered my first son who died. And then I managed to stay pregnant for 3.5 weeks till I was 26 weeks when I got sepsis, you know, a bloodstream infection, and had to have a C-section. And so, you know, my sons were 1 pound, 11 ounces and 1 pound, 13 ounces. And on top of that, my son Oliver has complex heart issues. He's had 2 heart procedures. He's actually having open heart surgery in a couple months. And my other son, Victor, was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. And so I had to navigate all of that space. They were in the ICU for several months. They were on oxygen at home for a year. And I found that their medical care was excellent, but that there were all these communication gaps that were like, I didn't know the answer to this. And it wasn't really medicine. Like for example, when your kid can't eat and he's throwing up all the time, which happened with my son, Victor, due to the way his esophagus was affected from his cerebral palsy, there was like no answer. And they were just like, well, you know, eventually he'll eat. And so I found myself going down rabbit holes. I ended up changing their formula because I was convinced that maybe that would make a difference. And I put them on a soy-based formula. Now I wish I hadn't done that. But no, there was nobody to guide me at that time. And, you know, things like questions like they were both on oxygen and it said you can't go into a room with an open flame. So I'm like, well, what do I do? How far do they have to be away when I'm cooking on the gas stove, right? Like they have to be in the next room. Like, and so I found all these data voids, which is what happens to people. And I fell in them and I saw how easy it was to go down rabbit holes. And I would also see other parents. You get familiar with other parents that you sort of all graduate through the NICU at the same time. You see them at follow-up appointments and I'd see them like not understand what the doctors were telling them. The doctor would just walk away and I'd say, oh, you need to ask this question next time, or you need to phrase it this way so you get the answer. And so I just realized that there were all these communication gaps. And then I started to think about that in reflection with my own practice. And so I actually decided to write a book on prematurity to try to help people. And so I did that. And then once my kids a little bit older and they were doing better, I decided that I would turn my attention to women's health. And that's how I got into it. And so I'm very empathetic to people who fall down the rabbit holes. You know, it's not excusable when people haven't had things explained to them. And so I'm just kind of doing my best to plug those gaps because I know what it's like to be 3 a.m. and stuck down a rabbit hole Googling something.
Brilliant. All right. Perfect. So
I know it's a bit of a story. It's like what do
no,
you say?
It's brilliant. I love it because this is important, right? I mean, you aren't in this for the fame and the fortune, right? Again, if we look at your social media account, it's not, you know, going up hundreds of thousands of followers. You're not trying to ride the algorithm. You're not doing any of those things. You're just Dr. Jack Gunter, Lasso of Truth, girl, you know, gals ask you questions. You every now and again, you go in and debunk a myth or you write about it in the agenda. And you're coming from a place of the real and raw experience. It happened to you. You understand. And you work with real patients and you're in there, you know, dispensing medications and staying current. You have colleagues, some of them who I've interviewed already. You guys converse, you're excited about the truth. All of these things are true. And yet for sure, and I know you understand what I mean, you'll have people that are so emotionally attached to their myths, even if the myths are harmful, maybe not for them because of their risk factor, but for other people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very, that to me is so perplexing, that attachment to the myths, especially when confronted with the science, the conclusive science, you know, like the, I know you have those anecdotes. You had that one study in 1987 based on 12 people that said inconclusive and must be further studied, but never was further studied. And then you've got the meta-analysis that says, hey, we looked at all the top research and the conclusion is this, and it's basically debunking that myth. And then people are so attached. They're like, well, you must be, especially when people are chasing pharmaceutical interventions, and then they'll say, but you must be funded by pharma, which is very odd. I'm sure you get a chuckle, right? You're chuckling. You're like, yeah, it is weird. Or that you're behind the science, you're behind the times, or that you're part of the patriarchy. Which is another very odd, you know, argument that you're part of the patriarchy that's keeping the truth and the goods from women. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And maybe if you can give some helpful tips for people, how to recognize you're in that emotional space or have been become a victim of that emotional space and how to flip it.
Yeah. So I'm very empathetic to that situation because most people don't believe inaccurate things about their bodies because they learned that in school with science, right? They believe it because some predator put that in their brain, right? And the analogy I always think about is religion. And I'm an atheist, so again, I don't mean to offend anybody who's religious, but if I were to go to somebody who truly believed that a communion wafer turned into the body of Christ, and I said, that's not true, they would think I was an awful person because that's a belief that they have. So what happens with these medical myths or these false beliefs is they're exactly that. They're beliefs and people are mistaking them for science. Right. And the problem is they weren't put in their head with science. So getting them out with science is really hard versus if I see something and I'm like, huh, okay, I always thought this, let me go back. Let me look at the literature. Oh my God, this is a new revelatory study that changes the whole way we think about everything. I'm on board. And so, you know, the whole thing about science is you have to be open to change. The greater the claim, the greater the degree of evidence needs to be, right? So if we're going to completely change the way we think about whatever, Alzheimer's disease, we need pretty good evidence. You know, and I get that there can also be confusion because, you know what, there's bad studies that are published. We've all heard about, you know, studies that are retracted. Apparently something like 50 studies about turmeric have all been like, are all suspect and are going to be pulled. And so, you know, I don't know if they're going to be pulled, but, you know, there's this whole like, you know, scam about or concern about, you know, sort of big turmeric basically. And so you have to stay open, always open to the science because we don't know. I mean, when I was a medical student, we thought that in the vagina, the only important bacteria was Lactobacillus acidophilus. And that's because it's the only one we could grow, really. So now we have molecular diagnostics. And now we know that there's lots of bacteria in the vagina that's so adapted to that eco niche, it can't grow in a lab, really. So we need molecular technology to identify it. Now that somebody invented new technology, we now know that there's all different kinds of lactobacilli in the vagina, and Lactobacillus acidophilus is not an important one. So, you know, if I stuck with my fixed false belief, I would still be, I'd be like a Lactobacillus acidophilus truther, you know, but you just have to say what. So I always tell people, we don't know what cool technologies are going to be invented to tell us something new and completely radically different. And that's the path of science. And all you can do is the best that you have with the information you have at the time. So these uncertainties get preyed upon by influencers and people making promises. So if somebody wants to tell you they can cure you 100%, right, or they have the answer that they don't want you to know, they're tying into a conspiracy theory, right? And they're making a false promise. I mean, I always have to be accurate with people and say, like, there's no therapy that's going to 100% fix everything. There isn't, you know? But, and you know,
some therapies are like walkable, right? Like it solves one thing and then something pops up and you're, you know, you go down that rabbit hole of band-aid after band-aid after band-aid. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's, you know, we're doing the best that we can. Sometimes it's a chip shot, like we can take your appendix out. But sometimes, you know, it's about like mitigation. And then also it can be difficult sometimes for people to do all the therapies. I mean, I always say like, there's only really one magic therapy, if you want to think about it that way. And that's actually exercise, because for every health domain, it, you know, pretty much touches everything. But if somebody's sitting in your office, you know, with a medical condition A, exercising tomorrow is not going to make them, it's not going to fix it, right? That's like a long-term thing. And I think humans are really bad at that. We're bad at sort of, well, I'm going to make this change and over months and months and months, I'm going to see something. And also that's just not appropriate. I'm like, if you're sitting in the office with heavy bleeding, you know, waiting four cycles might not be an option if you're on the verge of needing a blood transfusion, right? Versus, I'm just having some bleeding and my blood count hasn't really dropped yet. So, you know, you always have to weigh individual risks too.
I could just keep going down that one with you. And I think you explained it really well. And it also harkens back to what we were talking about originally about biases. And I don't know if that was off the recording that we were talking about biases or if it was during the recording. But when we have biases, we have a hard time unpacking what's true and what's not true. And if we can, you know, I just want to underline, if we can, what exactly what you said, if we can remain open-minded and stay curious and ask questions and be okay with doing a little bit of research, right? Sometimes it's just a clicking a link and seeing, oh gosh, that's a really old study. And oh gosh, that was only 12 people. And then you just skim to the bottom. The conclusion is needs more research, right? And so you don't need to be a PhD to be able to pull from that. Oh, well, you can't really extrapolate, you know, X from this study. Or you could also follow someone like yourself, right? And this can be hard, though, because if you're biased, you're more likely, and you're following and liking things, at least on Instagram, you're more likely to be shown accounts that are going to confirm that bias. That's just the way it goes. And so you end up kind of being in this silo of influencers and experts that can be confirming your bias. And then everyone's drinking the same emotional Kool-Aid.
Right. That's why I'm very big on people curating their Instagram feed, because not everybody deserves your eyeballs. And if you see an account, a big account spreading absolutely verifiable false, like obviously false information. So first of all, what other false information are they sharing? Probably a lot, because it's, you know, misinformation is like a wolf. They always travel in packs. It's never just like one thing, because most misinformation is tied in some way to a conspiracy theory. But sometimes it's tied to a financial bias. And then, you know, people should be very, very mindful of giving their attention to people in the medical space, doctors who also are profiting from products that are, you know, not tested, like supplements or, you know, untested, you know, medicated face creams and things like that. Because, you know, then there's a bias there. I mean, if you're personally profiting from a line of supplements, then why then would I not be suspicious that your dietary advice might lead me to need those supplements? I would be suspicious if I had a wall of birth control pills behind me and they were like Dr. Jen Genter's pills. And I worked for pharma company A. We'll say call them company A. And I helped design this kind of birth control pill. You would rightfully be suspicious of anything that I talked about in the contraceptive space or in managing heavy period space, because you'd say, you would think in the back of your mind, well, of course you're going to recommend the pill over something else. And, you know, even if I'm not intentionally doing it, I'm probably subconsciously doing it because maybe I make a dollar off of every pack of pills. With supplements, it's a lot of money. It's not a dollar a pack. I mean, there's some doctor who came up with a liver shield supplement, which, you know, I had reviewed by a bunch of liver experts, and they were like, no, don't take this. And he, you know, advertises it basically for women to, you know, to sort of help them not suffer liver injury from binge drinking, right? So there's that. And they emailed a friend of mine to be an influencer for them. And basically in 18 months, they said they're on track to be making seven figures. Seven figures, 18 months. Now, I don't know if they're lying about that or not, but you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of money there. And because you don't have any of it, because you don't have any of the headache of submitting to the FDA and following, you know, regulations. So, you know, and not everybody has time to report these people to the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, if they're, you know, doing soft ads. And if they, you know, so how do you tell? So the way I tell people is, look, do you want to follow somebody who's selling a product? And, you know, why would you, if you would follow Merck, then it would be fine. That's fine to follow, you know, that whatever other supplement company, you know, that person who has a supplement. But if you wouldn't follow a pharmaceutical company, then, you know, you need to think of supplements as untested, unregulated pharmaceuticals.
Mm-hmm. So I got to ask, and then I want to, but I don't want to get lost down this rabbit hole, but what about creatine? Because I definitely recommend creatine to my clients. It has a lot of research behind it.
Yeah. So sure. There are different, and that's the problem. So for example, prenatal vitamins, that's a supplement that has excellent data behind it, you know, and I just think that, but if I had my own, if I was an obstetrician, I had my own brand of prenatal vitamins, that would be like, really? Okay. So how do you trust my advice on that? That's what I'm saying. So there are some supplements that have some specific indications, and that's what makes it really challenging because most of them don't, and they all benefit from that sort of, that transfer of goodwill, if you will. Right. And so I think that one of the issues, and I know this is also true, very true in sort of the bodybuilding sphere, is that many things are contaminated. Right. So then you have to decide, how do you know that you're going to get something that isn't adulterated with, you know, a performance enhancing substance? Or they recently did a review, and in one of these supplements, they found a product that's never been tested in humans.
Yeah. Not surprised, actually. My husband and I were at a Mr. Olympia, and we had just heard about this successful multi-million-dollar, and of course this happens at Big Pharma as well, but a multi-million-dollar successful lawsuit against a certain company, a big company. And we were thinking, oh, they're going to go down, right? And then they were at the Olympia, and Olympia at that time, this was pre-COVID, was charging an astronomical amount of money to have a key space in the expo. And we were a very small company that we were with, a Canadian company. And we saw this company with like one of the biggest ad spaces. They had probably 100 staff. They were giving away tons of stuff for free. And the lineup was around the block as though no scandal had occurred. They had been spiking basically selling fluff as protein. They'd spiked it. Yeah, that's the world we live in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you buy something for libido, it could easily have a hormone in it. So you want to try to find people who can recommend, you know, vetted products, the best that you can. And that's part of the challenge because there are some times where supplements can have a benefit. And although they're much less than obviously the companies would tell you, but there absolutely are times where supplements can have very specific benefits. But for example, with creatine, you can probably, you can probably point to multiple studies that show this advantage for the specific group that's using it for this reason. And then, you know, hopefully find companies that, you know, that make vetted products, you know, and there's third party testing and things like that. But it's, the problem is that, you know, we have the same issue. Like, if you've had bariatric surgery, we recommend a multivitamin. How do you know if you're getting one that contains what it claims, right? So the ones that I tell people to be the most about are the ones that are the multi-ingredient supplements, right? So
the most concerned about.
Yeah. So the ones that say they're like for ovary support or metabolism booster, and you know, there's
proprietary more, you know, blends.
Exactly. Oh, proprietary blends. Absolutely stay away from that. And so I would say like the more ingredients in a product, the more skepticism you should have. But of course, there's always exceptions. Multivitamins are sometimes needed for people. So that's why, so you can see how people get, you know, how do they know? Because I've just said one multi-ingredient product might be good, but another one could be bad. And so that's the problem when we don't have regulation.
Mm-hmm. We do have some things like Consumer Reports, right? I mean, there are various platforms. I guess you have to, you know, you have to wonder if they're getting funded themselves. But I think, would it be, could we sum things up kind of distinctly for people that are listening to this piece and going, well, scratching their heads and going, well, my coach said I should be having caffeine before I do my cardio because it helps accelerate
Fatty
acid metabolism.
I'm not worried about big coffee spiking your drink.
Okay.
But, you know, so I would just say that, you know, people should be able to give you data to back it up. And in general, when something's been shown to be really effective, it almost always appears in some kind of guideline, right? So you could say, oh, this, look, it's in this guideline or that guideline. I don't know the exercise space as well, so I can't comment about that. And then Consumer Reports often reviews things, as does Consumer Labs. But, you know, so it's hard because, you know, so you have to find someone that you trust who can say that, yeah, this, you know, we definitely, you know, caffeine can absolutely have a boost for people. Here's different ways that you can get it. Here are, you know, these are products that, you know, I've looked at Consumer Labs or that have been looked at to be independently verified. And, you know, there's also the different labeling that people can see on the packaging to make sure that they're not, you know, why take something that doesn't have a label if there's a product that it does?
Yeah, exactly. Certainly, you know, third-party testing. There's also another label. Gosh, I don't know if you might know of it for Olympic athletes, right? So athletes that want to take a protein powder, they have to be very, 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 very careful.
Yes.
So there's a label for that. So it's not just third-party. There's an actual, an official stamp. I don't know if it's like WADA approved or something like that. I don't know if you know. No?
No, I don't know. But I know there's a specific sports one on for some nutritional supplements as well. And I mean, it's, you know, it's one thing in medicine, we don't want people to take a supplement because we don't want them to, you know, for one thing, but also, you know, it could derail your whole career if you take something that's adulterated and you test positive for a banned substance, right? That, I mean, so, you know, people just have to be, you know, it's very much buyer beware. But yeah, those third party labelings are the best that we have at the moment.
And then I think in terms of when you're on the social media space, when you see a lot of selling going on, and again, correct me if I'm wrong here, or Jen, but if you see people selling a lot of stuff, and selling's not bad, everyone's has their ideas about money and all that jazz. But if you couple that with saying something that's kind of proprietary information, like I know something special that nobody else knows, and I've cracked the code. And I've seen this a lot around the Menno belly and the special diets or the special training that you need to do. And that's what's concerning. And I think that's a very easy red flag. Again, it doesn't mean that they're totally wrong, but you should be definitely skeptical and really needing to see concrete evidence, like in very robust, high-level research. And it just is... You got to be speculative that this one person has discovered something that all the other experts and all the organizing bodies,
right?
And I've heard from people the claim that, for example, the Menopause Society, International, North American, Australasian, that they are behind the times, that they're funded or they're not current. They don't know what they're talking about. But my doctor influencer, who has a million followers, she has the good detail and she's here. She's my champion.
Right. Well, that's the power of an influencer, right? You know, that they're able to make people believe that. You know, there are no, if there was a stunning new study that should change how everybody should think in menopause, you know, it would be on in every magazine and every newspaper. It would be, you know, it would be groundbreaking, right? So if there was a groundbreaking study, you would hear it. You'd be able to Google groundbreaking study. So the idea that a single influencer knows more than all of the other menopause societies is just not true. They can't, because when you look at the guidelines that are put together, they're, you know, trying to get 30 experts to agree on a paper means that there has to be a pretty high level of evidence for all of it, right? Mm-hmm. And people have to disclose their biases. And of course, the person with a million followers or whatever on Instagram, where are their financial disclosures, right? So, you know, you have to submit your financial disclosures, have all that kind of stuff. And if there was true drug company bias, there are people like me on these papers that don't take any money. So, you know, the idea that every single person's in the pocket of one drug company is simply, you know, just not true. So mm-hmm. I would say that I would be very wary of people who say that they know more than the societies, especially when all the societies agree, right? So if you've got, you know, the International Menopause Society, the Menopause Society, the British Menopause Society, and you've got the Australasian Menopause Society, all basically saying the same thing, it might be some slight different variations, but all basically saying the same thing. And then you have somebody who says they know better, I'd be like, okay, like, so either, you know, you've interpreted the research completely differently, meaning you probably cherry picked what you like and have thrown away, or maybe you don't have the critical ability to evaluate the research, or maybe you don't care. I don't know what the answer is, but a single physician doesn't know more than all of these societies. And I think that, yeah, but that's hard for people to know, because who's going to actually go and pull up all the different things and look? And that's the thing about an influencer. If somebody's got you to believe them, you believe them.
Yeah, exactly. I think you went through that experience too when you were debunking, the Goop, right?
Yeah.
And it was the vaginal egg. I mean, that's what from that. And I'm sure you got a lot of heat from people that were just really attached to their idea of what the truth looks like. Thanks for tuning in to episode 1 of a 2-part series with Dr. Jen Gunter. She's provided us with a ton of great actionable information around healthcare for women, how to be alert on people's biases, and sharing her own experiences going down that rabbit hole, trying to find answers when the medical system failed her. I'll be sharing more from this conversation next week. We'll be diving deeper into menopause and some options that Dr. Gunter is really excited about. Thanks for tuning in.